G'day and welcome back to the Shed of Basketball Truth. It is Studio 3 here for Ball Don't Lie Australia. As long-term listeners will know, that's some brand new funky music to start the year. And we've got a few other changes as well. Some of the things that definitely aren't changing, though, local card shop Woolloongabba is still definitely on board, and so is Doctor Electrician, servicing all Brisbane areas and North Adelaide. But we've got an intern slash work experience kid. I say kid because he's pretty much half my age. Elliot Pittman, mate, thanks for jumping on board.
Thanks for having me.
No worries. All right, and of course, we've got some regular segments that are going to need a big name to talk to. And who bigger? Don't take that personally.
I was going to say, where are you going with this, mate?
Who bigger than the inaugural NBL One Women's winning coach for the Logan Thunder?
Yeah, I'll take that.
Nice. Of course, Braden Hazelhurst, mate, welcome.
Thanks very much for having me, mate. It's good to be on the famous Ball Don't Lie podcast. Long time listener, so good to be here.
Wow. We'll put that to the test later. All right, it's great to have you. Very much appreciate it. Obviously, NBL One, we're staring down the barrel of another year, season four. And we'll get to deep dive that a little bit, you know, as we get on with the show. But gonna start where we start with everyone who sits in the chair. Where did your basketball journey start?
Yeah, it's a bit of a funny one. Most of my family, extended family, is rugby league. We're from country New South Wales, and my dad played lower grades for Cronulla and all that sort of stuff. So kind of came out of nowhere. I know my mum played a little bit, but it was mostly netball. But when we grew up, I've got three older siblings, and my older brother started playing in Bankstown when we lived down in Sydney, and then we moved to Brisbane, and I just followed my siblings and got involved and started playing at Spartans. So try not to take that against me, but started playing there.
Doing my best.
And then, yeah, just played all the way through there and went to Adelaide for a while and played for Sturt down in Adelaide. And then when we came back here, finished my juniors off with Sturt and then, with Spartans, and then played Siebel. I'm sitting on the bench at Siebel and QSL or whatever it was back then, and then just got into coaching from there. So it's a bit of a different one, and our family's kind of bucked the trend of our extended family and got into a different sport.
Well, look, it does explain your lack of neck.
Didn't take long for someone to bring that up. One of my players in Chev Palvas would be very happy that got brought up, mate.
Oh, good. I'm here for you, Chef. Don't worry. But you touched on it briefly. You got into coaching. Now, a lot of our listeners, you know, obviously aren't going to make the NBA.
Yeah.
And they, you know, of course, it's not as easy as it looks to just start a podcast. Can you sort of break down a little bit of the coaching side of things? Like, how exactly did you sort of get into it? And what does it actually involve? Just on a regular week to week, regular week to week basis for you?
Yeah, well, I kind of was around it all the time since I was a kid. So always had that love for it. So even when I was really young, I always pictured myself being involved as a coach. I was actually mascot for some of the Spartans, famous ABA teams back in the late 90s and stuff like that. But yeah, just always around it, coached some school teams. And then it was actually Greg Vanderjagt, current assistant coach for the Bullets, who got me into coaching under 18s rep team at Spartans. And then as soon as I stopped playing, at the age of 22, got straight into coaching QSL and was assistant for CJ Bruton the next year in our Siebel team and all that sort of stuff. And then, I was fortunate enough to get an opportunity to coach the Sunshine Coast Phoenix QBL men when I was 24. And looking back on it, I really wasn't ready for that type of level. And then 2019, joined Logan. But yeah, it's something I suppose everyone can get involved with. And the biggest thing that I like to talk, especially to juniors about, is you don't have to play it at such a high level as well. Like you see a lot of people now, they're not happy if they make Div 2 or whatever. I played Div 2 almost my whole juniors, and then was fortunate enough to make my way to Siebel and stuff like that. But yeah, and then just got into it. And the thing is, everyone thinks it's relatively easy when they say they want to get involved in it, especially QBL or NBL one level. But the biggest thing people got to realize is that it's probably a, despite you having a full-time job and that aside from coaching, is that it's probably a 7 days a week sort of thing. Like, you know, you're meant to care for your players. So if they have something that they're going through and they call you or message you with that, you should answer or expected to answer. And if something pops up or, you know, someone's in trouble and messages at midnight or gives you a call at midnight, you're expected to, you know, do stuff, or people have questions about what they're struggling with on the court and they don't feel comfortable to message you until midnight or whatever, you know, you kind of expected to answer, or you should. So outside of, you know, I know our NBL one level is 2-3 trainings a week and only games on the weekend and stuff, but it's kind of an all week sort of process. And aside from that, you have all the extra stuff you do with video and all that sort of thing. But yeah, it's kind of a 7 day a week thing, but I love basketball, so I would do it even if I was time stricken with other things. And yeah, it's been a godsend for me in my professional career as well. So it sort of helped me with everything.
Nice. Well, obviously we touched on it earlier, but that first year in NBL one, obviously you guys took out the crown in the grand final, and off the back of that huge Michaela Cairn, she took away the finals MVP.
Yeah.
Believe.
Yep. Yep.
But what were some of your, obviously, you know, what were some of your great takeaways from that season?
Well, we had won the previous year when it was the modified season because of COVID, and we'd beaten Spartans in that one as well. And obviously they had sort of kept the same core and added to it with Matty Rocci and the likes. So going into it, we kind of, our team was exactly the same as that year. And going into the season, that was back when probably the women's competition didn't have much depth as far as the teams across the league. It's much better now. But we kind of went into it knowing that Spartans would probably be the team that we have to go up against to try and win the competition. And Townsville were probably the other one. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was a weird season because, you know, we were both undefeated heading into, I think we played them the last game before it shut down for a couple of weeks, mm-hmm. before we came back with the finals. And but we've been up and down just because we weren't playing the way we wanted to, even though we were winning. And then we went in and played Spartans at home, and I think they beat us pretty comfortably. And that was probably the best thing that ever happened to us. We took a lot out of that game and where we needed to be. And we kind of, even though we were facing other teams in the quarters and semis, we kind of shaped everything towards playing Spartans and what we need to do to be able to beat them. And we were lucky enough. We had a really good team. Like, we had a starting five. I think it was Michaela Cairn, Ash Ty, Cassie Carroll had come back for the QSL, and then that year of NBL one, and then Chev and Michaela Roof. But our bench was quite good as well, especially, you know, three girls coming off the bench. Carla Drennan, who went on to be at Townsville Fire, Indy Bauer, who's now at Townsville Fire, and Danny Bays, who, in my opinion, is one of the best shooters in the country in the women's game. And she's obviously playing at Boise State now. So, yeah, we went into that game and it was built up a lot because of the two teams and everything. And they had obviously gone through the season undefeated. We only had one loss. And it was pretty I said to someone during the week, it was a bit unexpected. It felt like the week had a lot happening. Like, we had our end of season presentations, but then there was different things happening during the week. Like, it felt like a really built up week, which was really good to see. And had a bit of extra emotion there for me too, being the old club. But going into that series, we kind of knew if we could get the first game that we could really put some pressure on them to try and get the second one. I don't think we could have gone to three because we were all stuffed, mm-hmm. even the coaches, by the end of the second game. And they did a really good job of taking away or putting a lot of pressure on Michaela Roof. I think they, you know, dedicate a lot of their effort towards that, and it sort of freed things up for Michaela, who had an awesome Michaela Keane, who had an awesome series. And the other thing too is if she didn't win MVP, Chevy Palvas probably wins it as well, because she had an awesome series as well. So really good to see what we worked on all year come out in such a big game. And you know, even that second game, there was periods I think we were down by 9 or whatever, and you know, we had some quotes that our team made fun of in post after we won that sort of kept us going and kept us sort of relaxed and all that sort of stuff. But it was good to see people really pay off for things they worked on too. Like Michaela had always been an awesome point guard at getting downhill and creating at the rim or creating for other people and stuff like that, but probably hadn't had the jump shot to go along with it. And she had worked on that sort of all year, and that really came out in that final series. She hit some massive threes and some massive jump shots, and then Chevy hit that three to tie it up in game two. And that energy around those two games was absolutely insane, especially the second one. Obviously, our crowd at Logan that came was awesome, and
it looked like it was I watched on the broadcast, and it looked like it was a Logan home game.
Yeah, it was amazing, and we probably did not that Spartans crowds make that much noise anyway, but we probably did a good job of keeping them quiet for the most part.
It was amazing to see your Logan fans travel as far as they did.
Yeah, 100%, and that's what it's only up the highway, mate. But yeah, Big Ben Lealofi was leading the way, and he's always good to have in the crowd. And yeah, it was just an awesome two games. Like, I know we probably say that because we got on the winning side, but you know, speaking to some players from Spartans after and as well, just the series and the way it was played, and some of the highest level women's basketball that I've seen, and everything like that. And the celebrations after were awesome with all the Logan crowd, and doing it on Spartans home floor was quite good. Obviously having a connection there, but yeah, it was an amazing series, and what a way to kick off the start of the NBL One era.
Yeah, look, it was fantastic. I'm going to be perfectly honest. I didn't tip your side.
I think I might have listened to a show you guys did before the finals.
Oh, yes.
Where you might have tipped Spartans.
Yeah.
Would that be correct?
Yeah, I might have done that.
Yeah. A lot of people did, though. A lot of people did. And then the following year, they tipped us, and it didn't turn out that well. So,
yeah.
a lot of people tipped against us that year, and understandably so. That Spartans team was legit, and they rolled through the regular season.
Yeah, look, they did, but those two games are absolutely fantastic to watch. So, I completely agree. It was high level basketball, and in the end, you know, could have gone either way towards the end. Like, you guys were right there at the end, put your stamps on it when you needed to, but Spartans weren't that far.
Yeah, and like I said, we kept saying it in the parties we had after. If the game went to game three, we were done. So Spartans needed to get us to a game three, because, you know, we met up the next day to have drinks and everything after to celebrate. And we were just saying, like, could you imagine getting up today and playing a game? And even me as a coach, and I just stand on the sideline, I was gassed as well. And that's probably our biggest regret, is that we didn't party hard enough, because everyone was wrecked from how crazy the two games were.
It happens.
Exactly. Happens.
But look, skip ahead, season two of the NBL. You know, you guys made the grand final. Let's leave it at that. but the last victory of the season for the Thunder was the semi-final against the Brizzy Caps, who you knocked out 2 years in a row. Who for you guys is that sort of, you know, that team? Is there a team where there's a, you know, really strong rivalry? Is there anything personal in that, or were they just in the way?
I think we actually didn't have that much of a rivalry against Brisbane. I think a lot of the girls from our team were friends with, you know, the likes of Abby and Bronte and that played for Brisbane. I think the first year we played Brisbane in the quarters, and that got fairly ugly. But
I was there for that. It was, yeah.
There was, I'm not sure who controls the social media for the Brisbane Capitals, but they uploaded a mic'd up thing after the game. I don't know if you remember this.
Yes, I do. And I think I know exactly what you're going to say.
And
yes.
We were absolutely pissing ourselves about this, and I won't name who it was. And They showed in the warm up of the quarterfinal, them going up to each other, two Brisbane Capitals players, and going, I've got Michaela. And then someone goes, isn't there two of them? Being Michaela Roof and Michaela Cann. Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh, I don't know which ones, which is there two? And I was like, we said, it was like, if they didn't know who the two Michaelas were, then they really weren't with a shot in that game. So that
and,
was.
And the scoreboard showed it at the end of the game.
Yeah. So. That was an interesting one. But the second year, we kind of spoke about it through the year, is they kind of reminded us of a version of us as far as they were really physical defensively, really got up and in and, you know, showed that sort of defense and then had a lot of shooters and had a point guard who could create for people and that as well. So really seemed similar to us, probably, you know, just on the way up a little bit. And then we knew kind of in that game, if we could sort of limit Abby's ability to create for everyone, that we were within a shot. So we were fortunate enough to get away with that one. But our rivalries were probably Spartans, obviously. Townsville, we had a pretty good rivalry with until the grand finals. You can't call it a rivalry if the combined score across two games is a 80-point loss. But and then I think probably the other one was that Northside Wizards team that one year as well. But that ended pretty quickly. But I'd say those two teams in Spartans and Townsville were our main ones.
Now, in that year, you technically had two bites at the cherry to make nationals.
I love that you're going to bring this up.
Not throwing shade. You know, just – and look, if I wanted to throw shade, I could easily say that, you know, I've been to more nationals than you have. But but I wouldn't do that. Correct. I wouldn't do that.
Yeah,
that's
well done.
Yeah. Thank you. But yeah, you guys obviously had that the two bites of the cherry. Now was that a stressful way of doing things with those COE games? Was it, or is it one of those things where nationals? It is just an extra thing for you, and the NBL One North is the entire focus.
Oh, the NBL One North is obviously the entire focus. I think we probably would have taken the first 2 years, for example, the first year if we had gone, if it wasn't cancelled because of COVID, we probably would have taken it a bit more seriously as far as like our whole team would have went and changed plans to be able to make sure we went. But that year when we played the COE, I think it was a really good thing, to be honest. It sure beat doing training during the week and instead of playing. So, but the funny thing about that was we were like, oh, I think Knox beat the COE by 32 and we needed to beat him by a certain amount. And I think we'd gone into the fourth quarter and we were up 7 or something. And I think we kept them scoreless for 7.5 minutes and we just hit everything and we got it up to enough where we beat Knox's percentage. And we were all celebrating and everything because we're like, oh, the way they played against us, we had to play amazing defense and amazingly in that game to get a win by that much. And we were like, there's no way they're going to play that good and you know, a team's going to beat them by more than 35, I think it was, or something. And they go play Spartans the next night. Yep. And obviously the travel was pretty crazy for the COE. I think they had gone basically all around the country in the past week.
Yeah,
they get Spartans, mate, and they had an absolute shocker, and Spartans were up by, I think, 20 after the first quarter, and we were all watching it on KO, and we all just switched it off because we knew it wasn't going to happen, and we were all devastated after that.
So you're telling me my first KO game is lead commentator, and you switched it off.
There was other reasons for that, mate. It definitely wasn't the commentary. And then that's happened.
That's good because Lockie Nuttall was on there as well.
So. I know, it was the commentary then.
And I believe, actually, going back to who was in charge of Capitals social media back in the day, I believe that was Lockie then as well.
Oh, it was too. So I can give him some crap about it. Stay chance. But we were kind of, you know, the normal sort of right thing to do. So we'll get there through the NBL One North. And obviously that didn't pan out. So we're really disappointed to, especially, you know, having been so, our team's performed so well over the last 3 years, to not be able to represent our club at Nationals one of those years, especially the year we won the NBL One North. I think speaking of the Spartans girls before our series, we said, you know, whoever went out of that probably would have won it, I reckon, because we were two pretty stacked teams and pretty good teams. So that's a bit unfortunate, mate, but that's the way the cookie crumbles.
It is indeed. All right, looking forward to this next season, 2024, Mitsubishi Motors NBL One North. You know, other vehicles are available. Like I hear MGs aren't too bad.
Yes, exactly, mate. The MGs are good.
Yeah. All right, opening night, Logan Thunder are going to face off against some familiar faces. Now, without the roof on the Thunder, does that limit their ceiling? Or are the stars the limit?
Wow. I normally get in trouble for saying dad jokes, even though I don't have kids, but you can tell you have experience.
Not my first radio.
it's going to be interesting. I mean, it's our first season since this group's been together without Roof and Caddy, who's now the coach of the Seahawks. Even the first year, we had Michaela Ash and Michaela Cann. And then a lot of young girls around it. I think a lot of our under-18s in that first year where we lost in the quarters to Gold Coast. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what it's like. You know, we're keen to see how we can go. And a lot of people will be expected to sort of step up. And, you know, young ones are expected to step up and everything. But it's a good challenge for us. I mean, having someone as dominant as Michaela and, you know, she's been – the best player in the NBL One North for the last 5 years, and I think has one MVP to show for it, which I'm sure they brought up, Caddy brought up with you, is crazy.
Didn't crazy. Need to bring it up. It's been brought up multiple times on this show without Logan Thunder people needing to be here.
It's absolutely insane to the point where we did have Michaela's citizenship ceremony during the night of the NBL One North Awards night, but we knew she wasn't getting it, which is it's a real shame because I think at least two or three of those years. The funny thing is the year she actually won it was the year she had the lowest stats that she's had across the 5 years, which was the first year in QBL. So that's always interesting. But, yeah, it's not another game. And I, you know, as a media person, I hate when people say it's those games, just another game and all that sort of stuff. But it isn't. You always love to make sure you get the number on people who've were previously at your team and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, but one thing we've learned, I think, across the last couple of seasons is to not build up the regular season too much and make sure we're peaking at the right time and stuff like that, which I thought we were doing last year before Michaela Cann went down with a foot injury. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting, but it's not just another game, but it'll be a cracker to start the season on a Thursday night. Which is interesting as well.
All eyes will be on you and the Seahawks. First game of the Mitsubishi Motors NBL One North season, mate.
Yeah. So, I'm not sure I'm in game mode on a Thursday night, mate. It's a pretty weird night to be able to play. But
come on, mate. You said before this coaching gig, it's a 7-day week thing. Exactly. You've got to always be on the ball.
And I get my weekend. So that's one positive thing. So
well, result for everybody at Thunder. All right. Well, obviously you've, you know, worked for News Corp, got the other commentary things and the journalism that you do as well on top of the coaching. Man of just love your basketball, obviously, but and your sport, of course. But is there anyone across the journey that really stands out, that interviews or, you know, that you've done commentary with, myself excluded, obviously, that really stands out as a, bucket list or not necessarily there, but you know, that really stands out for you.
Yeah, there's a few. I did if anyone knows Rodney Rude, I actually interviewed him before he did a gig up here. And that was pretty memorable for probably different reasons than most interviews.
Loved
young,
him when
young
I was a
fella
kid.
Over here wouldn't know who Rodney Rude is.
The name rings a bell, but I'm kinda like
Don't search him on YouTube.
No. into private browsing mode.
Yeah, exactly. He's a pretty politically incorrect comedian, Australian comedian. I've had some other good ones. Interviewing Ricky Ponting was pretty cool. But I think the biggest one, the other one that probably makes the honorable mention is doing an interview with Bainesy and Patty Mills, sort of in private when they came back after winning the championship with San Antonio. Wow. That was really cool. And
that's all right, because they brought the trophy the out for the tour. Yeah.
So when they did the, I think it was at King George Square, where everyone got to go see him, media people got to sort of go to the back and have a separate interview with him, and that was really cool. The one that stands out though, and I have to shout out my mate Pavle Krukayesh, who you probably don't know, he played GBL at Brisbane for a long time. He organised this, was going to a hotel and interviewing Vlade Divac. That was by far, and I think the interview went for about a couple of us went and just had a general catch up with him, and then he took us outside to the balcony or pool area, and I got to do like a 20-25 minute interview with him, from everything about his career and those Sacramento days and some funny stories around the NBA and different stuff around what he was doing with his foundation in Serbia, I believe, and stuff like that. And I think that's the one that definitely stands out the most, being a basketball head and someone who's also interesting to go along with it and has a lot of different stories. And that was the one that stands out for sure.
Yeah, I wanted to bring it back to the school space a little bit, school ball. Yeah. That's my getting into coaching there and stuff like that. So does anyone crack an early prediction? Does anyone crack TSS this year, you reckon?
This coming year?
Yeah.
I think they'll still be really talented. I think they lose JP and
They were 12.
Tweedy.
Yeah, but they still got Indy and Ash
McGrath.
So I think, and winning that championship by what? 50 something.
Yeah,
something
like that. For sure.
Even if you get a little bit worse, I think they'll still be all right.
Yeah, definitely. And I do individuals with Ash. So they'll still be really talented. Obviously, Indy Cotton, you know, one of the best guards in the country for his age. And having a coach like Anthony Petrie's not a bad thing to have at the GPS level. And that'll be good for as long as Peach is there, I think. I think they'll be a championship contender all the way through. But maybe teams will maybe try and do something to keep him out of transition. That might be a bit of a priority after going to all their games last year. And it seems like a lot of coaches have wanted to speed up the pace against TSS, which was just not the answer at all.
Didn't work.
No, not at all. I think there was one team that tried to, and it was a team that didn't have as much talent as some other teams, and they sort of kept them in check for the first half, and then you give them a 4 or 5 minute span and they've gone out by 40 or 50. So it'll be tough, but I think they're still the best team for sure.
Yeah. And my next one, thought I'd kind of go your late game as a coach, a bit of a moment thing. So if you're down, you're up two.
Yeah.
You're on D. Would you rather take a charge to win the game if the ref is blowing the whistle? Would you rather take a charge or block a shot to win a game?
Switch
it up. It's like not offense, we're on defense.
Well, funny you ask us that question, because we were up by two in game two of the 2021 NBL 1 North Finals, and Shivana Palvas got a block to seal the game. She blocked it, I think, out of bounds, but caught it, and the siren had gone, and she threw it up and kind of made for scenes that were really awesome and made some great pitches. So I think a block, because I don't think a lot of refs are calling the charge.
We did say that before, but
at the end of a game, especially Queensland refs, I think. So it'd be interesting. I don't want to put the game in the refs' hands at all. That's fair. I'd prefer someone get up and block that and make sure that shit doesn't count.
No, there's no contact.
If they call anything, it's probably going to be a block at the end of the game, even if it's an obvious charge. Yeah. So I'll take trusting my player over trusting the refs.
Okay. Strong words here. Strong words. I get it.
Yeah.
For sure. All right. Well, it's come to that time in the evening where I get to push this magical button right here. Boom, 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 where the ball is. Boom, 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 from Brisbane down. All right, time to talk bullets.
Yep.
Time to do it. All right. So obviously you're doing some color commentary on SNQ radio this season. What are your thoughts on the improvements that have been made from the stack of whatever you want to call it, that was last season.
Well, I think it's not just last season. I think it's been the shit since they came back. I think it's been a bit of a, it's been rough since they've come back. I know they made the finals that one year where they got swept by Perth. I think that was Lamar Patterson's first year. Mm-hmm. But I just think that whole time when they came back, they didn't embrace getting out in the community, doing a lot of things that way. I didn't think they embraced the basketball community. And a lot of things I heard during that period, you know, the company I work for was a sponsor the first couple of years, and was that, oh, we're trying to get the non-basketball crowd there. And my thing was, well, you're not getting the basketball crowd there. That should be your niche first, and then you build from there. Mm-hmm. And you went to the Brisbane Convention Centre, and it was the game nights were horrible. And I think that the
team, and as a season ticket holder, even the tickets were problematic for both those first two seasons,
which we heard about every year on all the Bullets groups and everything like that. And I don't think they did anything to address those across the next four or five years.
Yeah.
I think that's where the problem started. And I think, you know, the way they played, you know, Andre Lemahonis is obviously a great, amazing coach. And look what he did with the Boomers. You know, I wish we could sort of bring that sort of offensive style back to the Boomers a little bit, even though they won a bronze medal. But the way they played those first couple of years wasn't exactly a style that endeared themselves to fans either. Like, it was pretty structured, and you had to sort of run offense for 20, 24 seconds of the shot clock and stuff like that. So I think before it got to any of the players, I think the last 4 or 5 years it's been from the top down. I think that's really changed this year. You know, we've been fortunate enough to have a fair bit to do with them. Obviously there was a lot of turmoil last year, as you spoke about as well, but I think the owners have sort of got hold of it now and sort of taken a bit more ownership of everything. But this year we've been fortunate enough to see the new CEO in Malcolm Watts. And I don't know if you've met him yet, but he comes from rugby, Queensland rugby, and just the way he got into going out and make sure he's seeing everyone and doing different stuff and all that sort of thing. And Justin, again, I've known Justin since I was a kid. He played with sort of same year as my brother in Adelaide and stuff like that. And he made it his point when he came in too. The thing I liked about Shula was when he got the job, he made it clear what he wanted and just went out and got it. You know, so many across the years, the Bullets have been back. How many times have we heard, oh, we're getting that point guard to go along with Sobey? And it never happened. I'm not saying, you know, it's not my opinion whether he needed one or not, because I'm not at that level. But Shula came in and said, this is what he wants. He wants a point guard. He got that in Shannon Scott. Wanted to change the culture as far as the leadership style and everything. And he got guys like Nordo and everything who were great on that end. And he wanted to create that defensive identity. And he did that as well. Sam McDaniel, Mitch Norton, as I spoke about, Nathan Sobey, I think, brought more into the defensive end this year as well. And I think that's the main thing. They probably had a patch there where they went in that 4-game losing streak where their defense went off a little bit, but they got that back now. And for most of the season, it's been quite good. So I think they've addressed some key areas off the court as well as on the court. And I think that's proven huge dividends. I don't think, you know, these people will talk about, oh, you know, we can score more and all that sort of stuff. That I don't think the team was built for that this year. And that's where Casey Prather obviously helps. But you look at the recruitments of Nordo and guys like that, they wanted to address the sort of working hard, make sure they're, you know, defensive minded, hard nosed, sort of tough guys to bring in. And they've done that, and they can always build going forward. I think if this Brisbane Bullets team makes the play-in, it's a huge, huge success.
I agree, and I think they're about there, honestly. Any higher than that's just not realistic.
Yeah.
And, hey, you make the play-in, you never know.
Yeah.
You never know.
I'd actually said it before we called our last game is, you know, people were coming to us and saying, oh, there's concerns. They lost 4 in a row, and I said, like, one thing they've shown this season, if they have a losing streak, it's quickly followed by a winning streak. I think every game, every time it's been 3-game wins, 3 or 4-game loss, 2-game wins, 2-game loss, and they've responded with a 2-game winning streak now and got a big game. So, been quite impressed with them so far this year.
So you're in the news, man. What's the biggest story from that last game? Was it the Bullets winning, or is it the Kings sliding?
I think Bullets win, mainly because I'm biased, because I'm from up in Brisbane, obviously, and I think it's their first win there since 2017 or whatever. And I think it was getting over the last time they played them, where they had a double digit lead, you know, a month or so ago, and then Sydney came back and won it by, I think, double digits. Getting over that for them, I think, was huge to get that win without Chris Smith, and to have Casey Prather back in the fold, and Nathan Sobey keep going the way he's going, and stuff like that. But, you know, as far as probably nationwide and everything, it's probably the Sydney Kings, and they got some struggles at the moment, and their coach is probably under pressure.
Yeah, I've come up with an ESPN-style stat for the Kings. In the last five games, someone – either the Kings or their opposition have finished on 101 points.
Really?
Nothing to really back that up. Like most ESPN stats, it's just a stat for the sake of the stat.
It's one of those ones where no one scored 25 points when everyone had white shoes on the court.
Yeah, that's right.
Those weird ones you see in the NBA games.
Rolling with that newsman theory, on the back of their next game, which is tomorrow night,
yeah.
Which story do you think will be written? Bullets hit long range shots in the armory, or Tasmania Jack jumps over both Queensland teams?
Oh, wow. Well, I'm not going to call my editor anytime and ask you to do do headlines for our stories, but I'm pretty poor, mate. The Jack jumps one. That's bad.
Yeah, it's not brilliant, but hey. It's on trend. It's on brand.
I saw Sobes was a game time decision today due to a foot injury. I think if he's not playing, it's going to be real tough for him, especially on the offensive end. They really need him to contribute as much as he can to win games on that end of the floor. If they do have Sobes and everything's as per usual, Chris Smith's back, I think they can get him. I think they match up really well against Tassie. They beat him up here, and then the only time they've played down there, I think they lost by 2 points and probably should have won that one. So.
Yeah,
so I think the Bullets, if Sobes plays, get the W.
Okay. We were talking about this at the very start of the season. We had a bit of a joke about it because of, you know, how everyone was blowing it way up out of proportion. Young Mr. Rocco.
Yep.
How do you think he's progressing this season?
I think he's been awesome. The way he's played as a 17-year-old, and Shula keeps mentioning it, he's probably been way better than expected, and he's probably played way more minutes than expected. Especially now, like early in the season, even when Baines had that suspension, Tyrell was playing really well. So even though Rocco got his minutes, it was still pretty spotty and stuff like that. Now Tyrell's sort of still finding his way a little bit. I think he had an injury and stuff like that, but he'll get back to there. I was really impressed with Tyrell early in the year, but
yeah, just want to see him with a long stretch of not being injured.
Yeah, 100%. And I think the main thing now is, like, the good thing for Shula is if one's not performing, he's got three to play. And, you know, I'm a real big believer in, I've said it multiple times on the radio these last couple of weeks, these people criticizing Bainesy about, oh, he's not averaging 20 and 10 and stuff like that. Like, you got to look at his role. And there's been some games this year where he's played his role to almost perfection. Like the game where we had, can't remember who was against Southeast Melbourne, where they beat Southeast Melbourne by a fair bit at Nissan Arena. He was a plus 15 in, like, I'm not a big plus minus guy, but he was a plus 15 in, I think, 14 minutes. Had 10 points, I think 8 rebounds or whatever, stayed out of foul trouble, all that sort of stuff. But Rocco's been amazing as well. And they all give you something different. Like Tyrell sort of can be crafty around the rim. Bainesy brings you that physical presence that was good against someone like Alan Williams from the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. And then Rocco's almost the best shot blocker in the competition at age 17, probably only behind Will Magne. So some of those blocks he got on the weekend against Jordy Hunter. I know Jordy Hunter got him back at the end, but I think he did. And Jordy Hunter's, been awesome as well the last 2 years for Sydney. But some of those blocks were amazing. Even the one I thought they didn't make a big deal out of, the one where Jordy got an alley-oop and Rocco pinned it. I thought that to have that sort of timing and everything at that age is awesome. And also to have the confidence to get dunked on and then still challenge every shot after as a 17-year-old is amazing, I think.
Definitely. All right. General NBL question to round out our NBL stuff. If you're not tipping United to win, who have you got? Who do you think's going to do it all?
Well, until recently, I thought Melbourne United were a shoo-in. The last couple of weeks, or last week in general, I think they had three road games and won one of them, and that was against Sydney. So you probably can't even count it that much. they lost to Cairns on New Year's Eve and then lost to Adelaide, and that's a massive loss. So you're losing to Adelaide at the moment. So and DJ went off against them down there. And, you know, two players, like a team that's not really known for scoring, and their backcourt goes off against arguably the best defensive team in the league with Adelaide 36ers. So if the Melbourne United don't win it, I've got Perth. I didn't have them until recently.
For a stretch there, no, yeah.
But right. Neither did Perth fans. Don't
no, worry. They definitely didn't. They definitely didn't. And obviously I'm a bit biased. SEN owns the Perth Wildcats. And I think the best thing they ever did was back John Riley 100% during that period. I think he's well and truly got him back on a good skid. And the other thing, I didn't even have him recently when they had that winning streak. But I think after the weekend where they beat a red hot New Zealand team in New Zealand, to me, that was the game where I'm like, Perth are legitimate title contenders, and Bryce can win a game for you off his own bat.
He's back.
Yeah, 100%. He's the MVP now. I was going with Chris Golding for a while, and but you look at Christian Doolittle, he's probably been the player that they expected Jordan Usher to be. Jordan Usher came out and was like, I'm the best defensive player in the league. He doesn't really play much defense, so that's gone out the window. But Christian Doolittle, like the game they played at Nissan Arena against Brisbane, Sobey was on a hot streak, and Christian Doolittle is a big guy and ran around with Sobes for the whole game and kept him really quiet and had a massive game offensively himself. And he's one of the contenders for Defensive Player of the Year. And they got other people playing their role now, like those old sort of Perth Wildcats teams, like Hiram Harris is doing all the dirty stuff, and then people are stepping up and making shots, and Bryce is Bryce. So I think if Melbourne don't win it, it's Perth.
All right. Same question I've got to ask everybody who sits in the chair. Who's your NBA team and why should people get on the train?
That's good. Are we telling them my actual NBA team?
Oh, mate, you're in the honesty chair. I mean, the Ball Don't Lie podcast.
Well, I'm a LeBron fan, so I do go for the Lakers.
Currently.
And I always go for the team LeBron plays for. That game.
You're a journeyman fan.
Yeah, the game 7 in 2016, watching that at work on deadline day, nonetheless, was one of the best memories I have watching basketball. But my actual proper team is the Detroit Pistons. And that goes back
to... Bad Boy Pistons?
No, you would have been too young. Yeah, a bit later than that. Big Ben Wallace is my favorite player of all time. Best defensive player of all time, by the way.
Malice in the Palace Pistons.
Yeah, 100%. So I sort of kept with them even when they had Stan Van Gundy and they made the playoffs that year. And I think Blake played on a bung knee and they got swept by the Milwaukee Bucks and stuff like that. So when they give me a little bit of hope, I'm back as a Detroit Pistons fan. But
you were in big on their win the other day.
Yeah. It was funny. Actually, we were talking about it on commentary and my co-commentator Drew Forbes goes, I think they're going to break it tomorrow against Toronto. And I was like, you're kidding yourself. And then they beat Toronto. So they almost coughed it away in the last couple of minutes. But
and it took a trade as well. They didn't have OG.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So
well, that was the foil hat conspiracy theory ahead of time. They went, pulled the trigger on the trade. So because he thought they were going to lose the game and just went, we're doing this trade now.
Yeah, gotcha. And a reason people should get on board is it can't get much worse. So it's only up for Detroit fans.
As long huge as huge upside potential.
Exactly. The ceiling is huge.
No roof on this one. No roof. Oh.
So as long as Monty Williams doesn't play Killian Hayes anymore, it should be all smooth sailing, hopefully, after this.
All right, mate. Well, let's hit you with a quick fast five, and then we'll get to a little bit of local card chopper Willingabba Crack'em. So really simple one to start with. It isn't, but I always tell people it is. Who is your top five of all time when it comes to players?
All time. So LeBron.
Yeah.
Mike Mike first. I'm a LeBron fan, but I still think Mike's the greatest of all time. Mm-hmm. Mike, LeBron, wasn't a huge Kobe fan.
It's all right. I'm a Celtics fan, mate. I understand.
There you go. There you go. I think you got to respect some of the old school guys. So I think Kareem's got to be in there just purely because of the accolades and
the Lou Alcindor,
all that sort of stuff. So outside of that, who are my other two?
Be hard off the dome. I would have to go away and
it is a hard one because I've always just gone LeBron and Mike, LeBron and Mike. Yeah. I'm actually. Apart from that, I'm going to throw one that's probably in the top 10 for most people, but never mentioned the top five is Tim Duncan.
Mr. Consistent.
So I think he's, he was always successful and was absolutely legit. My fifth one.
Got some big guys there.
Yeah, that's it. Hey, I'm going to have to go with a guard or something. Not a fan. Wasn't a Kobe fan. I hate the fact that, you know, Kobe in game seven of, for example, like finals, like 2010 finals, goes like, I think, 6 of 27 or something. Mm-hmm. If that was LeBron, that would be made out to be the biggest deal of all time. Yeah. Mm. And Kobe, it's like, yeah, he got his fifth title. Woo!
I remember watching that game is very vivid for me because I had to, for lots of different work reasons, I had to fly myself down to Sydney, pick up a truck from a thrifty, and then drive to Canberra that night. And basically I got the closest pub to Thrifty and that's where I watched the game simply. Yeah. And because I'm a massive Boston fan and my brother at the time was a huge Lakers fan and it was all sorts of smack and it came down to the end. And I walked out when the game was done and dusted, I walked out with Lakers people, celebrating behind me, sorted out my thrifty truck, and then spent the next 4 hours with no radio, just chewing
on what it happened. Did you leave after the Artest 3? Is that when you left?
No, I waited. I waited to the very end. I don't walk out. I make sure it's done.
If you had Perk, I reckon you still would have won.
That was the problem.
Yeah.
It's the only upside to having, it was the only good time to have Perk on your team.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. My fifth one, I'd have to go purely because of his trash talk and the legendary stories of his trash talk. I'll go Larry Bird. Larry Bird is number five. Legend. So, nice. Pretty regular top five, I think, apart from Timmy D, maybe.
Timmy D and Larry Legend don't always get the call up. They're a little bit more sparse. Timmy D especially, he doesn't hit a lot of because he was that. And just too consistent.
Yeah.
Like he didn't have those flash in the pan wild because he was doing it every night.
I think you get extra marks too when you've been at the one franchise for a long time.
Definitely.
So
and played all 4 years of college.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't take that 2004 Olympics against him, I don't think. Even though he's not from the US technically, isn't he? He's
Dominican
Republic. Something like that. Maybe Virgin Islands. That's US anyway. But yeah, he was in that team and they weren't very great.
Look, of all the things, basketball is one of those great things where if it doesn't go your way, it can easily be swept under.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. We spoke about it earlier, right? Those MJ Wizard years. Didn't happen. Didn't happen.
Look, that there's a reason we didn't talk about the the grand final games against Townsville. Like, didn't happen.
Thanks for bringing that up, mate. I appreciate it.
Didn't happen. All right. Favorite playing number and why?
Number 9 was always my favorite playing number. Going back to my story about being a mascot for the Spartans teams of the late 90s and early 2000s, my main mentor, and he's an assistant coach for me now, actually, in Scotty Lloyd, wore number 9, and just always followed that throughout my juniors and into my seniors.
Nice. Favorite movie?
Favorite movie. People are always surprised with this one. It's American Gangster with Denzel Washington. I think I've watched that about 100 times. I could watch it every night, probably. Yep.
Russell Crowe.
Yep.
Bloated sort of. He's... I don't know who he's trying to fool with those workout scenes in that one, but
it wasn't good.
It was not Gladiator. Yeah. It wasn't even Master and Commander.
No. followed closely by Patch Adams. Patch Adams, my second. That's a great movie as well.
All right. So, you know, you guys turn it around at Logan Thunder and you add to the story and Hollywood comes and knocking.
You know, oh, that's a stretch. It's a Bikram yoga stretch, that one.
Who, you know, Braden Hazelhurst movie is in the works. Who are you getting to play Braden Hazelhurst?
It need to be someone with an odd body type, mate. It's,
and if you say The Rock.
Yeah, it's definitely not The Rock.
Danny DeVito?
Oh, it's not that far. Oh. Not that far.
Just right. Throwing out names. Out.
Let's split the difference. Give him a little bit more height because I don't think he's my height. I'll go Jonah Hill.
Nice.
Jonah Hill.
Nice.
So nice. I'm not sure what his neckage is like.
Depends if we're going like super bad or like.
Today. We're not going War Dogs. Jonah Hill. Not that one. Super bad, I can live with that because that movie is all time.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the lines for that movie, man. Don't get me started on that one. But yeah, it'd have to be more recent Jonah Hill, not War Dogs or The Field in Superbad, I don't think.
Favorite kicks, favorite basketball shoes?
Kobe fours, always. Ooh, Kobe fours. Yeah.
All right. And if you could go back in time to watch any game in the history of basketball as a spectator, what game would you go back and watch?
Game 7 of the 2016 NBA Finals. 100%. That the build up to that game, the way the Cavs came back, and that I think it was Oracle Arena back then. Crowd was amazing, and the way that the crowd fell silent that when Kyrie hit that three at the end was amazing. So I'd go Game 7 of 16 Finals.
Nice. Yeah, I was watching it at home, and power outage, so I had to just get in the car. Like, we're talking of the fourth quarter. So I got in the car and just kept driving till I got to a suburb that had power. Like, the traffic lights were working.
Where were you living then?
Strathbone. I had to go, like, it was some huge outage. And, yeah, had to just keep driving till I found a pub with its lights on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I was, like, year six. We weren't allowed to watch it. They mentioned we didn't see it. So we were just kind of, like, loading it on Google, being like, oh, like, they're up. And then we'd reloaded it, and then, like, he had hit the three.
Yeah. Year six in 2016.
Yeah.
All three stories had the same energy. All right, gentlemen, let's do a little bit of a local card shop of Woolloongabba. Crack 'em. I have a pack of 2022-23 Topps Chromes 4-pack. So not a deep pack today, but pretty sure there's going to be some fire in here, as there always is. For those of you who haven't played before or listening for the first time, really simple. I get a pack of cards, I crack them open, turn them straight over, I read the back of the pack. Whenever I get to the name of the player, I say somebody. We get to the end, you guys call out, or at any point actually, you guys can call out your buzzers, which I'll give you in a second, and fire off any guesses you've got. If you go early, happens to the best of us, you will then be locked out until the other person has had a go or has heard all of the clues.
So we can interject at any time.
Anytime.
Okay.
All right. This is not like my regular classroom. Speak out of turn. You're good. Let's go. What do I reckon? LeBron? Could be your buzzer?
Yep. Is that as in LeBron James?
Go for it. Right, let's do it. LeBron James over here. And let's go Dwayne Wade.
Oh, okay. I like
you,
that.
Since you're a Heat fan.
Yeah.
All right. First card of the four. And because it is an even number, if we do need a tiebreaker card, I'll find a little something for us to work with.
Right.
All right. The veteran, long-range expert, joins the Breakers for his 11th NBL season.
LeBron James.
Yes.
Cameron Glidden.
You're in trouble here, Elliot.
There you go.
Yes, absolutely nailed it. Number three for the Breakers. Ooh, we might need to get you an ant on at some point. If this is the level, this is pretty good. All right, no pressure there, Elliot. Just be better. All right, card number two. The 20-year-old former Joondalup Wolves junior made his mark in July 22 when he celebrated as a member of the senior Australian gold medal winning Asia Cup team. somebody was the youngest player since Juggling Joe Ingles to score 10 points in his NBL debut and steps up to the main roster for the NBL 23 after being a development player in his rookie campaign. Now, the front of the card, it's a rookie card for Melbourne United. Any thoughts here, gentlemen?
Rookie for Melbourne United last year.
Rookie for Melbourne United last year. Center.
Dwayne Wade.
Yes.
Jack White? No.
No, not Jack White.
It's like the only Aussie big I can think.
Melbourne United. Mm-hmm. Big from WA. Mm-hmm. And he's stepping up to the main roster this year.
Mm-hmm. According to the back of the card. So I don't always know.
So he's obviously not playing for him this year. Trying to think who was on their team last year.
So I'll run through some of the details. 209 centimeters, 90 kilograms, shoots right-handed, was born in 2002. Nationality is South Sudanese Australian.
Oh, David Aquera.
Nailed it.
Now playing for the Perth Wildcats. That's why.
There you go.
Yes. All right. Ooh, two absolute banger cards. All right, to finish out, third card. Come on, Elliot. Come on.
I'm ready. Let's go.
Let's go. The 24-year-old is expected to be a key member in his third season at the Breakers. After some breakthrough performances, including a...
LeBron James?
Yes.
Will McDowell White.
Correct. Otherwise known on the show as a Brizzy Willie.
Yeah,
I was waiting for a little bit more to say. Because I had him, I was like, it probably will be him.
Anyway. I'm good mates with him, but I knew he was 24.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so
that probably helps.
Put close together.
Yeah. All right. Ooh, fun side note. Recently saw this man walking around a markets where I was helping my niece serve. What's she selling?
Is that on the card?
Fairy floss.
Is that on the card? Is it?
No. All right, here we go. No player has hauled in more rebounds in the NBL over the past two seasons than somebody. And he uses his massive wingspan to full advantage at both ends of the floor. He is not afraid to take on a defender with his familiar left-hand dunks, and is just as effective at shot blocking. In just three seasons, he already has a spot in the Hawks' top 10 shot blockers of all
Sam
time.
LeBron James?
Yes.
Sam Froehling.
Well done.
Oh, lefty, that makes sense.
Yes. Yes, Sam Froehling was on the cusp of that Boomers team.
Yeah, he's playing really well too. I think he's been huge under Justin Tatum, so I don't think that's far away if he keeps going the way he's going.
Well, look, fingers crossed.
The other night, I don't know if I watched the whole game, but he didn't miss for the first half at least. He just every bucket.
Yeah, when he's on, weapon.
Yeah.
Absolute weapon.
Yeah.
But all right, mate. Braden, last question, mate, before we wrap it up. Who should we get on Ball Don't Lie Australia next, mate?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Well, thank you.
Who should you get on Ball Don't Lie next? I could say some people that I won't say for some different reasons.
All right, I'll throw in the other caveat. If you can help, it is also nice if, you know.
Not Logan.
Well, it can be anyone. But we have had a lot of people sit in the chair and say, Patty Mills, like Mr. Ralph from Ipswich, for example, said, yeah, you should get Patty Mills on. All right, mate. Well, you get in touch with him and you let me know how that goes.
I'm going to say the Grey Wolf down at Southwest Metro gets Brendan Tees on.
Ooh.
Brendan Tees is a great storyteller and low-key quite funny. Former teammate of mine at Spartans.
A strong connection with?
Him and Brock Modem are very close friends, if you know Brock, former Boomers or legendary Boomers. When they're back in town together and they've been out, when they're together, they have the worst dance moves of all time. Like, I'm talking Teasy sitting in the middle of the dance floor doing the winding in the fish all that type of stuff. And
so proper dance
moves. He's an absolute class actor, has great stories, and he's absolutely hilarious. I'll say Brendan Tees.
Nice. Good answer. I like it. Yeah. All right.
The most grey, I think, 35-year-old too. Is he 35, 34? So give him shit about that too. I'll give him shit after this podcast, actually.
Well, you know, it's only fair that we throw some your way. There's a little bit of grey in your bit. There's also some grey in mine. There's some grey in mine. I just, you know.
It's the worst thing ever. It started to get on one side and then it started growing on the other and I was like, ah. And then I thought, my barber keeps suggesting to colour it. And I was like, no, first of all, I don't want to look like one of those Lego men that sort of just, you know, but also a bit of salt and pepper, mate.
Mm.
Yeah. Hey, bit of wisdom.
I had absolute karma get me with my beard because one of my greatest mates of all time, his beard looked a little different. I was like, mate, are you colouring your beard by chance? He's like, yeah, his greys are coming in. Don't worry about it. You look great. Just let it be. It's fine. Like, I've known you longer than anyone else in the world. You're fine. You're all good. And then a week later, grey started appearing in my beard. I was like, well, now I can't colour it, can I?
No,
I have to just roll with this.
Good story for you, actually, with my beard before you go. Mm. So I very rarely shave my beard as you start throwing everything all over the place. one time I shaved my beard ages ago. I was coaching at state championships, shaved my beard, and someone who I've known since I was a kid in V-Dog, Michael Van Dodgen, walked straight past him the next day. Didn't know. A bunch of other people didn't know. Anyway, last year I was assistant coach for Queensland South under-18 girls, and I said to them, if they make the semis, they get to shave my beard, and I haven't clean shaved in about 6 years. And they did it. And my age goes down to about 13 if I shave my beard. And unfortunately, I did it the day we had the bronze medal game. We won a medal and had all the photos taken without my beard. And, mate, let's just say Jabba the Hutt made an appearance in those photos. It was not good. So I'm sticking with the beard and keeping it that way for a long time.
Wanawanga. All right. All right, mate. Thank you very much for coming in and joining us. It's been absolutely fantastic.
No worries at all, mate. Thanks for having me.
All right. That's going to wrap us up here for Ball Don't Lie Australia. Big thanks, of course, to local car shop for Woolloongabba and, of course, Doctor Electrician servicing Brisbane and North Adelaide areas. But if you are listening on streaming services that allow those 5-star reviews, please do go and do that. Like, share, all that kind of stuff. But until you're listening to us again, just remember that ball don't lie.
It never does.